Welcome to the Enlightening Motherhood Podcast. I'm your host, Emily Hamblin.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley Schultz.
As moms who are currently in the thick of raising kids with big emotions, we know firsthand how challenging their intense behaviors can be.
And that a little support can go a long way.
This is a non-judgmental community that was created for you or any mom who's feeling overwhelmed, frustrated, or stressed.
Each week, either Emily or I will share our experiences, offer practical tips, and interview experts in the field so you can be empowered to help your children with their challenges.
Join us as we help you enlighten motherhood.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. This is Ashley. I'm glad that you're joining me today. So I want to talk about encouraging autonomy in children because this is something that has been on my mind. And it's one of those things that it's a goal of ours that we have in parenting. We want to teach our kids skills and help them gain confidence so that they can become more independent and someday be able to function without us. And it can be easier said than done sometimes. So we know that we can do this by allowing them or encouraging them to do things for themselves and to wrestle with their own problems and to learn from their mistakes. But how specifically do we do that? So there is a book and it's called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. And it's by Adele Faber and Elaine Maslisch. And these are the same authors of the book Siblings Without Rivalry. If you've heard of that one or read it, they really are a wealth of information. I read this book when my son, he's 13 now, when he was about a year old. And I remember being really impressed with it and just eating it up and just thinking, wow, this has so much good information in it. And it's not just on this topic. There's lots of topics in this book pertaining to parenting. This is just one of the topics. But I recently saw it on our bookshelf and I started flipping through it and I had marked up this book pretty good way back then. And I started reading this chapter about encouraging autonomy. And there's just so much good information that I thought it would be great to share a lot of it with you. So for me, I feel like I'm really good about this, encouraging autonomy in some areas. For example, with chores. My kids have been doing chores since they were really young, since they could just pull utensils out of the dishwasher when they were like 18 months old and put them in the drawer. Then other things I'm not quite as good at, like the morning rush with my kids. That's not a time when I shine with encouraging autonomy all the time. I try, but it gets a little stressful. Or dinner time with my kids, and I'll talk about that a bit in a minute. So the book points out that when one person is continually dependent on another, negative feelings can arise. And that could leave your child feeling inadequate, insecure, resentful, frustrated, or even angry at times. And they say that it's helpful that when you find yourself feeling agitated because you're doing so much for your child, you can ask yourself, do I have a choice here? Do I have to take over? Or can I put my child in charge of this thing instead? So dinner time, my husband works late, so he's usually not home for dinner. And everyone's hungry, and my kids get hangry really fast. They have that low interoception where their body doesn't give them the signal until they're really like super, super hungry. So I'm dishing food on plates and I'm trying to get everybody to the table and have their hands washed and all of that. And I don't know why, but it just feels like getting everybody a cup of ice water just feels like one more thing that I just, you know, they're all asking for it at the same time and it just kind of feels overwhelming sometimes. I don't know why. And I feel like if I put a pitcher of water on the table, it's just going to spill because that's usually what happens. So I'm wanting with my kids to have them fill their own cups of ice water before we start dinner so that it's ready to go. And in my mind, it feels like, why is that so hard? Like, why can't you just get some ice water for yourself? I feel like I'm doing everything for you. You're 8 years old. You're 10 years old. You're 6 years old, whatever. It just feels like they could do that for themselves. And it's the whining and like, get me the water. I'm thirsty, you know? And so that's something that I'm working on where I don't feel like I'm doing well with encouraging autonomy. And that's on my mind. So maybe you have some areas that you're thinking about with your kids where maybe you're doing really great in some areas and then in other areas, not as great. And you would like to see some improvement there. So the book talks about or breaks down six categories, six different things that we can do to encourage autonomy. The first one is to let your child make choices. This is something I've been doing with my kids for a very long time because I learned pretty early on. I have lots who are strong-willed, and with strong-willed kids, choices are like magic. When you just tell them what to do, it's going to be a power struggle every time. So things like, do you want half a glass of juice or whole? Do you want to practice the piano before dinner or after? We're going to leave the park in 5 minutes. Do you want to go on the slide one more time or on the swing instead? Do you want to wear the blue shirt or the black shirt? Do you want to take your bath now or do you like to take it in 5 minutes? This is one that I do all the time with my kids, the now or 5 minutes. And they always choose 5 minutes. And I usually set a timer. So if we have that agreement and they know what the expectation is, they know the timer is going to go off, then when the timer goes off, they're usually more compliant to do the thing that we had agreed on. And giving your child a choice, it gives them practice in making decisions and it gives them some control and confidence, but it also reduces that conflict. Like I was talking about, it takes away the power struggle and the resentment. So I have found this one to be particularly helpful with my kids. The second one is to show respect for a child's struggle. So for example, you see your child struggling to open a jar, and instead of saying, here, let me open it, which I have been guilty of lots of times, you could show respect by saying, a jar can be hard to open. Sometimes it helps if you tap the lid with a spoon. Or you see your child tying his shoes and you're trying to get out the door. And instead of saying, what's taking so long? Come on, we got to go. You can show respect by saying, tying shoelaces takes a lot of fancy finger work. It takes lots of practice. Or another example, your child is doing math homework and is struggling with fractions. Instead of saying, adding fractions is easy, I'll help you. You can show respect by saying, adding fractions can be difficult. It's not always easy to find the common denominator. Let's work on it together. And a useful phrase is, sometimes it helps when. Like in that earlier example, if sometimes it helps when you tap the lid with a spoon to open the jar, or sometimes it helps when you turn a knob of a lock a few times before you try the combination again. And this is great because if it doesn't help, the child is spared feelings of inadequacy. But when the child's struggle is respected, then he can gain courage to complete a job by himself. So if he knows that the task is difficult and he succeeds at the task, then he is going to feel like satisfaction and accomplishment that he was able to do that. If he knows the task was difficult and he wasn't able to complete the task or didn't succeed at it, he at least still has the satisfaction of knowing that was a hard task. No wonder I wasn't able to do it on my first try. Maybe I can do it the second time. So I really like that, that perspective. And number three is to not ask too many questions. So instead of when your child comes home from school, how did your teacher like your composition? Did you pass the math test? Is anyone coming over after school to hang out with you? No? How come? You could say, hi, it's so good to see you. So they point out that too many questions can be experienced as an invasion of one's private life, and that children will talk about what they want to talk about when they're ready to talk about it. Now, I don't completely agree with this one. I understand not wanting to bombard your child with lots of questions and overwhelm them. But I also think that asking, how was your day, or one that I do with my kids a lot is, do you want to share three things about your day with me? And I feel like that's not too intrusive. That's my younger kids. I guess with my teenager, I still ask, how was your day? And say it's good to see you and try not to bombard him with too many questions. But then there are times when I'm like, I know that he was working really hard and studying for that test. And I went over some questions with him and we were practicing together and I want to know how it went. So I'm going to ask about that. And I think that's okay. I lived with my dad in high school. My parents were divorced and he didn't ask a lot about my personal life. He kind of swung to the other end of the spectrum of like not asking hardly anything at all and just sort of keeping to himself. And I wish that he had asked more. So I guess I'm also coming from that perspective. But you know your child and you know what's best in that situation. But just, I guess the point is to be sensitive to the possible effect of your questions. And they also, there was an interesting note from the book about asking your child if they had fun. Like you pick them up from a school event or a party or something and you say, did you have fun? But that puts an expectation that they should enjoy themselves. And if they didn't have fun or something felt uncomfortable, they might not feel like they can share that with you because you're kind of putting on that pressure of, oh, it was supposed to be fun. Did you have fun? And they don't want to let you down. So I haven't thought about that before. I ask my kids all the time, did you have fun? So that's just some food for thought that I'm going to be more mindful of. The fourth thing they mention is to not rush to answer their questions. So if your child asks you, why does dad have to work? Instead of jumping right in with, so we can have money for food and clothes and our car, etc., you can give them a chance to explore this question themselves. Why do you think dad goes to work every day? Or if your child says, I don't like eggs and I'm tired of cold cereal, I am not going to eat breakfast anymore. Instead of saying, okay, I'll buy something else, you could say, what are some of your ideas for breakfast options? And then write them down. I will say I have two of my five kids who get really frustrated when I don't give them answers and when I turn the question back on them. So just expect that you might get a little bit of pushback. An example with one of my kids just happened yesterday. And he is quite the entrepreneur, but he has this little business and he earns money doing things for people. So he'll pick up their bulk trash and take it to the dump with his dad. He will clean out garbage cans or pull weeds or pick up dog poop or, you know, there's lots of different little jobs like that. And like every several months or so, I put a post on Facebook and on different Facebook groups in our city offering his services. And so he wanted to do that because he's working on some goals and trying to earn some money. And he was insistent that I just put together, he wanted to type it on Facebook, but he wanted me to tell him what to say. And he didn't want to have to think it through. He just wanted me to either find an old post and repost it or just tell him verbatim what to say. And I was making dinner in the kitchen and he was nearby with my laptop. And of course, this encouraging autonomy is on my mind as I'm preparing this podcast. And so I was encouraging him, put together a rough draft and type out what you want to say, or even just make a list of all your services. And then we can put it into a paragraph form. And he was getting super frustrated. He didn't want to do it. He just wanted it to be easy and like be done in 1 minute. And we went back and forth for about a half hour, maybe 20 minutes of, hey, what are the services that you offer? You do this all the time for people. Let's list them out. What are they? And he kind of begrudgingly, I pick up people's dog poop. I pull weeds, you know. And he finally was able to get a list together. We got the link to his website. And when he was done with that, I helped him post it to the different groups. And he did it. And it looked great. And it sounded good. And I think he felt a sense of accomplishment when it was done that he wouldn't have had if I had just said, okay, I'll just take care of it. I'll let you know if anyone replies. There was an example in the book that there was a kid who he was worried about his report card. And he wasn't sure how his parents were going to respond to his grades. And so they went through it with him, and he had good grades in every subject until they got to math. And so his dad said, "So the subject you're having trouble with is math." And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to do much better in math though." And his dad said, "How are you going to do it?" And the boy said, "I'll try harder." "Well, how?" "I'll study harder. I'll do my homework. I'll finish my work at school when I can." And his dad said, "It sounds like you're setting some goals for yourself. Let's get a piece of paper and write them down." So he encouraged the boy to decide what his goals were going to be and to write them down so that they would stick more in his mind, and to kind of work through that problem himself and find some solutions. And the process of searching for the answer is often as valuable as the answer itself. So we don't want to take away that process from our kids. That's really valuable. Number 5 is to encourage our kids to use other sources. So an example is, "Dad, my angelfish looks sick. What should I do?" And the dad could say, "I wonder if the pet shop owner has any suggestions." Instead of the dad jumping right in and saying, "Well, let's see, this is what I would do." Go to someone else who also might have some answers. Another one, "Mom, did you find me a guitar teacher yet?" And the mom could say, "I'm still making inquiries, but I would also like you to ask around at school for some recommendations." So having the child share part of that responsibility. Another one, the child says, "I was late for school today. You have to wake me up earlier tomorrow." Instead of saying, "Okay, I'll set my alarm for earlier," you could say, "Let's get you an alarm clock of your own." We want our children to know that they're not completely dependent on us. There are other sources outside of our home that can help them with their problems too. And number 6, we don't want to take away hope. Instead of preparing a child for disappointment, let them explore and experience. For example, "Mom, I'm trying out for the lead in the school play. Do you think I'll get the part?" Instead of, "Look, I don't want you to be disappointed. Why try out for the lead when you have never had any acting experience? Maybe there's a smaller part you could try out for." You could say, "So you're going to try out for the school lead. That sounds like an experience." Or, "I want to get a job babysitting." Instead of, "Oh, you're much too young for that. No one's going to hire you. Maybe try in a couple years." You could say, "Oh, you think you might like to work as a babysitter? Tell me about it." And there was an example from the book about a boy who grew squash in his garden and he wanted to sell it. His mom wanted to tell it. She thought in her mind, "These squash are way too small. There's no way people are going to buy them. The ones at the store are like double the size. And I just don't think he's going to sell any. So I'll just save him the disappointment." But she didn't want to take away his hope. So she let him try it. And within an hour, he had sold all but one. And one neighbor told him that he was an enterprising young man. And so she was really happy that she hadn't taken away that hope. And then another example, a child says, "I'm going to start saving my allowance for a horse." And instead of saying, "That will never happen," you could say, "A horse? That would be fun." So I will say, I am not great at this. I always want to step in. I don't know if it's maybe the perfectionism in me, but or the anxiety. I hate seeing my kids fail, and I feel like, I just want to save them from that. So this is something that I really want to focus on. This is like the number one takeaway that I want to really implement with my kids. Because by trying to protect our children from disappointment, we protect them also from hoping, striving, dreaming, and also sometimes from achieving their dreams and their goals. And that is the opposite of what I want. So that was really eye-opening for me. And of course, these 6 skills aren't the only ones that can encourage autonomy in our kids. There's other ways to encourage autonomy that they also point out that are worth mentioning. So we want to let her own her own body. So refrain from constantly brushing her hair out of her eyes, or refrain from constantly adjusting our son's collar, because this can feel like an invasion of privacy. and avoid saying things like, sit up when you do your homework. You spent your allowance on that? What a waste of money. We don't want to say negative things about our child in front of them. Like, if you're talking to a friend and your child is nearby, yeah, in first grade he struggled with reading, but he's doing better now. Even though you're talking about how he's doing better now, it's that negative statement about, well, yeah, he struggled last year. Just him overhearing that could be harmful. Or, yeah, he's really shy. And I know that I've done these things with my kids before, so it's a good reminder. And also, you want to let your child answer for himself. So if your friend is talking to you and your child is nearby and she says, does Johnny like going to school? Instead of going into it, you could say, well, he's right here. He can tell you how he feels about school. We also want to show respect for a child's eventual readiness. So sometimes a child has a desire but isn't emotionally or physically ready for it. And instead of forcing them or embarrassing them, you can express confidence in their eventual readiness. I'm not concerned. I know that when you're ready, you'll do it. Like with potty training or whatever it is. And I know potty training is a frustrating one because we really want them to be ready. But it can help encourage autonomy for them when we are being confident that they'll be able to do it when they're ready to do it. We also want to watch out for saying too many no's, because some children can experience it as a direct attack on their autonomy, especially strong-willed kids. And then they use all their energy to counterattack. They can scream and melt down and call names. And sometimes instead of exploding, they can implode. They could yell, why not? You're mean. I hate you. It's exhausting. And you may have experienced it with your kids. So we still have to set boundaries, but we can do it without actually saying the word no in some cases. So instead of saying no, you can give the facts. So if they ask, can my friend come in to play? We're leaving in 5 minutes. So obviously they're not going to come in if we're leaving, right? Are your jobs done? That's another one I ask when, you know, if they're like, can my friends come in? Instead of, no, not right now, I just ask them, are your jobs done? When your jobs are done, they can come in. An example from the book, mom, can you drive me to the library now? Instead of, no, I can't, you'll just have to wait. You could say, I'd like to help you out. The problem is the electrician is coming in the next half hour. You can also sub a yes for a no. So if they ask, can we go to the playground? Yes, right after lunch. And of course, there's roadblocks to this, which is why sometimes we struggle with encouraging autonomy in our children. For me, one of them is convenience. And when we're rushing to school in the morning, we're trying to get out the door and we have a timeline we have to adhere to. Encouraging autonomy with some things is not my number one priority. So most of my kids are really good about getting dressed themselves. They get dressed the night before in their school clothes and they sleep in them because it makes everybody's lives easier. But one of my twins still struggles with putting his own socks on, and he can do it, but not when he's rushed. He has low frustration tolerance and he gets really frustrated. So that's one thing that I still do when we are in a hurry. If we don't have a lot of time in the morning, then I will just put his socks on for him. He puts his shoes on. It's just one thing that I can cut out. So there's a time and a place for encouraging autonomy, and rushed, stressful mornings might not be that time. Another roadblock is we feel strong feelings of connectedness to our children, and we have to fight against seeing their failures as our failures sometimes. And it's also difficult to allow them to struggle and to see them make mistakes when we know that our words of wisdom could prevent those mistakes. So sometimes we just want to step in and say, you know, I've been through this and you shouldn't do that because, look, I know what's going to happen. I have to bite my tongue sometimes, especially with my teenager as he's getting older and having experiences that I'm like, oh, you know, I've done that before. I don't recommend it. But letting him experience it himself to some degree, depending on what the situation is. And yeah, it's hard not to share advice too when we have, when we know we have the answer, right? And there's also something about being needed by our kids, because it's innate for us to help them. And from the time they're born, when they're so dependent on us and they can't do anything themselves, that it's difficult to kind of let go in some ways over time. There was an example from the book of a kid, a little kid, and he was in a daycare, and he needed to go to the bathroom. And he said, "I can't go to the bathroom without my mom here." And the teacher said, "Well, why not?" And he said, "Because she always claps for me after I go to the bathroom, because she's proud of me. So I can't go without her." And she said, "Well, I have an idea. How about after you go to the bathroom, you clap for yourself? I bet you could do that." And so she took him in and he went in, and then she heard him clap when he was done. And he said, "I did it and I could clap all by myself. I don't need my mom to clap for me." And then the teacher relayed this to the mom, and the mom was really upset. And she said something like, "He doesn't need me anymore. That's my job. I need to be there to clap for him, to help encourage him, and you're taking that away from me." So she wasn't happy about that. But we know that's part of our job, that over time, we want to encourage our children to be able to do things for themselves. But it is hard to let go sometimes. And then we also might have the belief that good moms do everything for their children. I think my mom had that mindset when I was growing up. Just kind of the thought of what that mother wouldn't do for her children. She's so amazing. She does everything and she just keeps going. And my mom was a single mom. And I think she just felt like if she did it all for us, it would be for our benefit. And it was actually the opposite. And I've learned over time that helping encourage my children to be more independent and to learn things for themselves is such a great gift that I can give them. And also, though, at times there's a lot of comfort for the child in having things done for them, like having their hair brushed for them, even though they can do that for themselves. I have a friend who shared an experience where her daughter was struggling and she was a teenager. And the friend was thinking and praying about, what can I do to help her and serve her and love her? And she felt like she should clean her daughter's room, even though her daughter was capable of doing it herself. And this mom usually had her daughter clean her room herself, but she thought, this is a way that I can love and serve her. And the daughter appreciated it so much. She went in her room and just collapsed on the bed and was like, "I just feel so happy right now." So sometimes we can, especially if our child, if their love language is act of service, this can be a great way to connect with them and show love toward them on occasion. And I will end with a quote that I really love from the book. And it says, "Whenever we listen to children's feelings or share our own feelings with them or invite them to problem solve with us, we encourage their self-reliance." So I would invite you to take one thing you learned from this episode and apply it in your parenting this week. And I hope you have a beautiful week with your family. Hey, this is still Ashley. There's something that I didn't mention in this episode, but it's really important, so I'm just going to add it on here at the end. There is something called executive age, as opposed to an individual's actual age, which means that their mental age is lagging behind their actual age. So according to Dr. Russell Barkley, who is an expert in the field of studying ADHD, kids are about typically 30% behind their peers in this area if they have ADHD. So roughly about 3 years behind their peers. Even though their brains are developing normally, there are areas of the brain that are behind. So a reminder that executive functions are the skills that we use to focus, remember instructions, juggle lots of tasks, plan. These include working memory, emotional control, and emotional maturity. So as we're talking about encouraging autonomy with our kids, we need to take that into consideration and not be expecting them to be able to do something because they're a 10-year-old or a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old. And I still struggle with this, even though I know these things and I have to remind myself of them. But I found a great article that it has a chart in it where it shows a child's actual age and then their executive age. So a six-year-old, their executive age is actually 4.2 years. And a nine-year-old's executive age would be 6.3 years. So looking into teenage years, a 13-year-old is really 9.1 years with their executive age. And a 17-year-old is 11.9 years. And you can see other ages on the chart, but that might help keep it in perspective. And I know it's a good reminder for myself as well. Just might help us in our parenting journey, and especially as we're talking about autonomy, and we do still want to encourage it, but it's just something to consider as we are doing so.
If this podcast episode was meaningful or helpful to you, can you think of a friend who might benefit from hearing it? Why not send them a quick text with a link to listen? I know it's a message I would have loved hearing years ago.